This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Congressional members are back in their districts this week, reconnecting with voters. Today, for example, Eastern Washington Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers spent time at Fairchild Air Force Base, in addition to a few other meetings. One place she was not was at a town hall meeting organized for congressional candidates by the progressive group Fuse Washington. As people filed into Riverside Place in downtown Spokane on Tuesday evening, the event's lead organizer, Jim Dawson, invited them to interact with him using one of the new tools for political organizing.
Throughout this event, you're going to be invited to get involved in campaigns by texting words to the same number, 30644. So if you haven't already signed in, please do so now, following the instructions up there on the screen. And if you have any trouble signing in, ask a young person.
By the time the program began, the auditorium was mostly filled. Dawson noted the growing national interest in Washington's 5th District congressional race, and he announced his group is organizing two other town hall meetings, March 29th in Pullman and May 2nd in Walla Walla. But he was having trouble getting candidates to attend. He said all who had declared their candidacy were invited. Eric Agnew, an independent, accepted, but then suspended his campaign a few weeks ago. One of the two Republicans in the race, Jared Bonneau, wasn't there. As for the second Republican in the race...
So despite every town hall being scheduled during a congressional recess, when our representative is supposed to be in the district, and despite the months of notice, Representative McMorris Rogers has declined to attend all three of these town halls.
To encourage McMorris Rogers to attend, Fuse Washington volunteers passed out postcards with a pre-written message urging the congresswoman to commit to the other forums. All they had to do was fill in their names and addresses and turn in the cards. That meant the fourth candidate had the forum to herself, and that seemed to be just fine with the crowd.
Please join me in welcoming Lisa Brown.
Brown has been a college professor, an influential elected official at the state level, and the chancellor of Washington State University's Spokane campus. But in her introduction, she went way back and talked about how her political beliefs were formed.
I was shaped by those experiences, the experiences of the movements that made social change during the time I was in high school and college. So from the civil rights movement, through the women's movement, through the first wave of the ecology movement, as it was called, anti-nuclear war movement, etc. I was shaped by that.
And then she made her case for why voters should elect her.
I'm running for Congress to bring the voices and interests of Eastern Washington, rural and urban, people of all abilities and backgrounds, of all religious or faith traditions, to the other Washington, not to bring talking points written in the other Washington and deliver them here.
Fuse Washington says it's working this year on reforming Washington's tax system. It also supports efforts to gather signatures for a climate change initiative and to win support for Initiative 940, which may appear on the November ballot. Its organizers say the measure is aimed at de-escalating violence encounters between police and suspects. Once in a while, officers from the Spokane Police Department are featured on a TV program called Cops.
Sit down! Sit down!
In my apartment!
You need to put your hands behind your back.
No, I'm not.
You're gonna get maced.
Literally tucked.
You're gonna get maced.
Yeah.
Do you want to get maced?
No.
Those were not sounds from Spokane police, but in a few weeks, Chief Craig Meidel says clips that show Spokane officers on the beat may air again. The department has a contract with Langley Productions, the company that has made Cops for about 30 years.
We have an opportunity for our community to show not only the types of calls that their officers are going on while they're in bed sleeping that they're not ever aware of, but it also allows them to see the professionalism of the officers that we have on our agency. It allows them to see the complex, unique, and often dynamic calls that our officers go on consistently. And it gives them a first-person view of what happens when they're driving down the road and they always wonder, I wonder what's going on over there. This gives them a front-row seat to see exactly what probably is going on in some manner or another.
Some in Spokane think clips like this show the city in a less than flattering light. Some have complained to City Council President Ben Stuckert, who had his assistant do a study of these programs.
These shows, the live reality TV shows, show that there's an overrepresentation of minorities as perpetrators of crime. So they're perpetuating systemic racism. These shows overrepresent the instances of violent crime that happens in communities because people would rather watch on their TV violent crime than watch your normal shoplifting or something like that. And they also overrepresent the number of crimes that end up getting resolved. So it sets an unrealistic expectation of how many crimes are actually resolved.
The Spokane County Sheriff's Department has its own TV contract with a program called Live PD. Some would like to see the city ban the police department from having its officers participate in programs like this. Stuckert isn't ready to go that far, but he is proposing an ordinance that would make TV companies jump through a few more hoops to get the footage they want. First, he would require companies buy a city business license. They also would have to have up to $1 million in liability insurance to cover themselves in case they're sued. And he wants companies to get the written consent of the people they film. The officers sign waivers, and the suspects being filmed give their verbal consent, but Stuckert wants their written consent as well.
To me, you're having the worst day of your life. You've called the 911. You've been in a domestic violence situation. When you open your door to answer, we saw a call on Live PD that happened on the South Hill where the sheriffs responded. Now, if you're having the worst day of your life, you've been beaten by your wife or your husband, and you're answering the door, you do not expect to have a television camera that is going to put you on TV to the rest of the nation.
Chief Meidel says some of these things are already policy. Officers can say yes or no to having camera operators in their cars, and the department has complete control over what goes on the air. He says his department has developed a good level of trust with Langley, and he worries that putting too many restrictions on filming, such as requiring suspects' written consent, may erode that relationship.
You know, understanding that the cops' production has a lot of money invested in their employees here, so if they send their employees here and they're only getting a quarter of the folks that are willing to sign that waiver, that's not a good return on their investment. So rather than continue to come back here, it is conceivable that they would go somewhere else.
Meidel says the police department continues to negotiate with the city on Stuckert's proposed ordinance.
Every person that I have heard from, both internally and externally, has absolutely loved it. In fact, they think it is one of the coolest things to see their city and their police department on national TV.
The ordinance is due for a first reading next Monday and a hearing and potentially a vote the Monday after. This week, nonprofit organizations in Spokane screened two interesting documentary films as part of fundraisers. One looks at the amount of food we waste and efforts undertaken to try to salvage some of that and reroute it to people who can really use it, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. First, A Walk Through Poverty in Spokane. It's a half-hour documentary produced and directed by Megan Schuyler Kennedy. She's a filmmaker who works for Rogue Heart Media. We'll spend the next few minutes with her and her film. It was commissioned by John J. Hemmingson Philanthropy. Spokane Neighborhood Action Programs was also involved.
People will just say, why can't you fix poverty? There's usually no one answer. It's not just economic, or not just health related, or not just connection to others. It's usually a myriad of different symptoms that feed into the systemic nature of poverty. And again, they're as individual as we are.
The film was shown Wednesday at the Magic Lantern as a way to raise money for A Cup of Cool Water. That's a downtown Spokane nonprofit that specializes in helping homeless youth. But the documentary is also available for groups to see at their own events.
I was a real prideful person and finally realized and found out you have to get humble and you have to ask for help sometimes.
Even if you're someone who's not likely to actually end up living in poverty, poverty impacts you because of its cost. What are we losing as a society because people cannot achieve their potential.
I think a lot of times when you're dealing with issues of poverty or homelessness, there's this instinct to make it very gritty or make it feel very otherworldly. And the reality is poverty is a spectrum, and it's our neighbors and our friends and our coworkers who are living it. And so to be able to go and share very personal stories in a way that was very unintrusive but also very intimate was just really, I think, the way to go. And that's what we've gotten the most reaction to, is just this feeling of, I can just relate to this. You know, this could be my friend, this could be my sister, my brother. And that was really the goal behind the piece, was opening eyes to see that oftentimes poverty is situational and none of us are insulated from it.
One of my, what I consider my own biggest flaws is that I think, God, what did I do to deserve all this? Because it seems like the challenges keep coming. You always got to look for that little light, and it could be in the smallest of things.
We tried to walk that line of walking along with folks who are experiencing it currently, as well as some folks that were able to be more reflective on it, you know, not trying to be there with someone in the middle of maybe the most stressful chapter of their life. So that was a sensitivity we had. We wanted it to feel real and immersive, but we also wanted to respect the fact that this is somebody that might be dealing with a very big struggle, and giving them a little distance from that core challenge was important as well. So it's definitely not a story of heroes and victims. It's a story of a community with neighbors, and that we need to have compassion for each other and maybe soften our own judgments or assumptions around what our neighbors might be going through.
I think it's really important to understand that everyone has a unique story. My life is, I feel pretty normal. I'm a mom, I work, but I have unique struggles.
Be so careful. Give me hugs and kisses.
Stop being judgmental. When you see a mom stressed out in the grocery store who might be ready to snap, encourage her. There's so many things we can do, and it, from very complex to very simple.
Sometimes it even takes a smile, that's it, to kind of open that door to sharing life with each other. And I think that's the big thing, sharing life. You can't do it on your own.
How did shooting this film affect you as a person?
In a great way, to be honest. I feel like my understanding of poverty has broadened immensely, and as a young parent, to be honest, that was a big impact to me, to realize that access to education, the access to childcare that you can trust and depend on, there's big implications for people depending on what their employment situation is. And unfortunately, as a society, we don't have all the support systems in place to enable people to succeed, even if their ambition is there, even if they're putting in all the hard work that you can imagine. We met some of the most hardworking individuals who unfortunately just couldn't seem to pull themselves out of the situation they found themselves in, and that's where the compassion comes in.
Some of the folks we're housing now have been homeless for 10 to 20 years, so it's hard to get the, you know, get them off the street, but it's hard to get the street out of them. Some things have to be relearned. We have to change to meet the needs of who we're seeing and what we're seeing.
So what is success with this movie?
Success with this movie is getting it in front of as many eyes and hearts as possible. It's been very exciting to see the reaction so far. We've had almost 40 screening requests at this point, everything from universities to large corporations to small church groups, and even little, you know, round tables, a sack lunch kind of viewing in a small office downtown. The stories are high impact. You know, you really have that chance to feel like you get to know somebody, and your heart goes out to the challenges that we watch them tackle, and our hope is that everyone leaves viewing this film with maybe a greater sense of compassion and understanding for what poverty means, and knowing that none of us are exempt from the possibility. So having a caring heart and seeing what you could do in the solution is a great answer to have as a community.
Megan Kennedy is the director, producer, and editor of A Walk Through Poverty. If you want to show this documentary at one of your own events, you can go to walkthroughpoverty.com. And now to the second film. This week, the Spokane Edible Tree Project showed the 2014 movie Just Eat It, A Food Waste Story, as part of a fundraiser for the project. The Master Gardener Foundation of Spokane County was a co-sponsor.
I started coming across these numbers about how much was being wasted. And I just thought, how is nobody talking about this?
40% of everything raised or grown is not, in fact, eaten.
If that much food is being wasted, how much of it is still good, and can we eat it?
Nikki Thompson coordinates the gleaning program for the Spokane Edible Tree Project.
The film follows two people, Jen and Grant, and they basically pledge to live half of a year only off of food that would otherwise go to waste. So through their adventures, they find kind of a mind-boggling amount of food and places where you might not always think about food going to waste. They look a lot at the distribution process, dumpsters just completely filled with food that may not even be past the expiration date. They take a look at fields gleaning, which is what we do, harvesting the excess produce that is left behind. They look at restaurants. They look at personal consumption. So all down the food system line.
And they had decided that they were going to live on the food that they found. Is that correct?
Yes. They live entirely off of food they find in dumpsters or cold produce or food from leftover from restaurants.
And how did that work out for them?
I think by the end they were a little fatigued, but they lived pretty well. They found that the quality of food that they could find was almost gourmet in some cases.
This is edible, but it's not edible to the supermarkets. As a grower, that's heartbreaking. When you grow the fruit and you can't sell it, that bothers me.
So you as a gleaner, you have a little bit of insight into this as well. Do you find that same sort of excess of available food here in the Spokane area?
Absolutely. Thinking specifically about what we do, we harvest from fruit trees and nut trees. It's pretty astounding. There are thousands of fruit trees in Spokane County, and I would say the majority of that may not be used, from backyards to commercial growers.
May not be used just simply because people don't harvest it.
Yeah, don't harvest it. It falls to the ground, and it doesn't get picked up by someone who could then utilize it.
So how do you get involved with gleaning? Do people invite you in? Is that how that works?
We approach some folks and then other folks approach us. We'll glean anywhere from a backyard with one fruit tree to commercial orchards. So a lot of times people with residential trees will contact us. We have a fruit tree registry, and then we'll organize volunteers to go out there. Or we may approach a commercial grower and then get a larger volume from that.
And are people getting more open to that idea?
Yeah, a lot of people are very responsive. It also helps that we're a nonprofit organization, so they get tax relief from that potentially.
Nikki Thompson is an AmeriCorps project employee for the Spokane Edible Tree Project. The movie is Just Eat It, A Food Waste Story.
Wasting food is not only widespread, but it's condoned.
The scale of the stuff that we've seen so far is pretty shocking, and I think we've only seen like the littlest bit.
The Winter Olympics in South Korea closed this weekend. Sometimes seeing the games inspires people to try a sport they wouldn't otherwise try. Curling, for example, is the sport I would try. But there are some more interested in adventurous sports, such as ski jumping. And about the only place left in the Northwest where beginners can learn big hill ski jumping is in Leavenworth. That's where we find correspondent Tom Bonsi standing at the top.
I'm going to step to the edge here.
Okay.
So if I were a braver, younger person.
You got it in you, Tom.
I'd be looking down, and it's pretty far down from the top of this. And this is, you know, a fraction of what the Olympians will do.
Leavenworth Winter Sports Club president Brett Johnson guided me up the wooden tower and ramp at the top of the jumping hill.
Parents below might be encouraging their kids to go off, but they have no idea, if they haven't been up here themselves, what a steep incline this is and what it's like to look down and know that you're going straight off that jump.
Johnson says plenty of fearless youngsters try ski jumping here, as well as a few adults, include Johnson's 15-year-old daughter, Stella.
I started ski jumping when I was really little. I was like probably three-ish, and I would stand, my dad would hold me in between his legs, and we would go off the little jump.
Stella has since progressed to the tall jump and is a big fan of the sport.
The first time each year is a little nerve-wracking, but it's just natural now, and it feels fun, and I just enjoy it. It's not really nerve-wracking anymore.
She says crashes are rare. 13-year-old Brendan Fallon of Leavenworth says he's pushing himself to fly farther.
Yeah, it's really special. It's really fun to do, and then if you have the chance to do it, go and do it.
Leavenworth's current ski jumps could be categorized as small and medium-sized. The larger one launches jumpers over 70 feet. They're currently out of service because the snow cover melted off in recent weeks. This village in the Cascade Mountains once had a much larger Olympic-sized ski jump. North American distance records were set there from 1941 to 1970. You can see the rickety remnants of the launch ramp high on the hillside above a present-day rope tow. 85-year-old Chell Bakke remembers when Leavenworth was the epicenter for long-distance ski jumping in the Northwest.
They had special trains came from Seattle and Everett, and a lot of people came from Spokane. And
what is the biggest crowd you remember?
15,000, maybe.
Wow. And that's for a national championship, maybe?
Yeah.
When Bakke was in his ski jumping prime in the 1940s and 50s, he remembers almost every Northwest ski area had a long-distance jump and a team. By the 1970s, public interest had faded, and the historic facilities in our region were all dismantled. Leavenworth's really big jump was the last to go. Unsustainable maintenance and insurance costs contributed to its demise. Now, if a youngster catches the bug and dreams of competing on the world stage, you pretty much have to move to Utah, Colorado, or some other Olympic training center. That said, Leavenworth Winter Sports Club coach Rob Fallon says his community is determined to keep its ski jumping tradition alive at its smaller jumps.
I mean, we've got the history here, and the town is, you know, it's a pretty tight-knit community, and it's something easy to keep going. I mean, it's come up here on Wednesdays and Friday nights, and you know, it's better than just going to the bar.
Start them young, the other coaches say, and the heritage will fly on. I'm Tom Bonsey in Leavenworth, Washington.
Inland journalist, Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. If you missed a segment or you want to hear the program again, you can hear the podcast at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Send your comments about the program to InlandJournal@KPBX.org or leave a message on our listener line, 509-232-6904. Thank you for your support of the program and of Spokane Public Radio. We'll be back next week. I'm Doug Nadwanek.